Well, more than 100 years ago, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange used to be conducted between two chains down in Diagonal Street in Johannesburg, in the bottom end of Johannesburg. Of course, it's far more sophisticated now. Nobody goes along there. Back in those days, it was a place of a den of ill repute. There was all kinds of scandals that used to be breaking. And what's happened recently kind of reminds me a little bit of those days. We'll be talking in a moment to the chief executive of Mantengu Mining, Mike Miller, about what he's going through. Mike, we spoke a while ago, and it was an interesting story that you have with your chrome miner. You've got big ambitions. You seem to be going in the right direction. But my goodness, you've been through the mill over the last little while. If one is to take your statements at face value, well, there have been hits put out on you. There's a colorful character called Zunaid Moti, who's somehow got involved in all of this. Your former accountant appears, according to you, to be trying to kibosh all of your plans, and not only that, to put together a illegal share syndicate, the JSE, not defending you. Yo, it's a big story. Let's start at the very, very beginning, and in a nutshell, just tell us what Mantengu Mining does and why you are such an attractive proposition, it appears, for people to manipulate your shares.
Yeah, Alec, thank you very much for having me this afternoon. We started out on a journey to prove that we could raise funding for rural South Africa. And we did our proof of concept with our first chrome and platinum mine called Langpan, which is near Thabazimbi. Subsequent to that, we bought a chrome mine just north of Zeerust, a silicon carbide operation in Creel, an iron production plant in Palaboa, and a platinum plant in which we, in the last or the final phases of getting all the conditions met, with Sibanye called Blue Ridge. So we have been on a pretty aggressive acquisition plan. It's a plan that we've had for quite some time. And obviously, as an executive, we're hell-bent on achieving those milestones as quickly as possible.
So you're a mining operation. You're a junior miner. You've got a number of these operations that you are either creating or turning around. But now you've got other things on your mind. Who is Ulrich Bester?
So Ulrich is one of Mantengu's previous directors. He's currently the CFO of Liberty Coal and Liberty Coal Terminal, and he's the Chief Executive Officer of Sable Exploration and Mining, or SEAM, on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
And how did he get connected with you?
We have mutual friends, and so I have known Ulrich for quite some time. He's an experienced miner. He spent a lot of time working at DRA and left DRA. And at the same time, we were just starting out on our acquisition and listing journey. He needed a home, and we thought him to be a suitable candidate at the time to fulfill the role of Chief Financial Officer.
Is he a CA?
No, he's not. He's a, if I remember correctly, he's a mining engineer, and he's got a master's in finance.
Okay, so he's well qualified, sufficiently well qualified to do the books, if you like.
Yes, correct. He's a smart man.
So what went wrong?
I can't really tell you, other than in June 2023, we were approached by a whistleblower who made it clear to us that Ulrich was now working for the Liberty Group. They had in their consortium their eyes set on Blue Ridge, and we were warned that Ulrich and the syndicate would look to start shorting our stock. At the time, this was all, I mean, breaking news to us. I mean, it's totally a foreign concept to us. So we immediately shot the flare up with all of our corporate advisors, lawyers, auditors, company secretary, and said, "This is the information we have. What do we do from here?" Now, I think what most people don't realize is that it's a very complicated landscape between conflicting legislation. So I sit here as, let me say, the lead director of Mantengu Mining Limited. In terms of the Companies Act, I'm required to own the entire real estate of the company, and that includes the share register. However, being listed, the Financial Markets Act effectively forces us to outsource that role to the JSE, where they monitor, obviously, all the trade data for Montengu Mining. Now, I think ordinarily where, you know, in a fully functioning market, I think that's fine. I think there's enough safeguards to give the directors comfort that their shareholders are being protected. But what we started to see in our investigation starting in June 2023 was the recurring anomalies, which clearly pointed to the whistleblowers' information shared with us. And that was at the end of each day, we would see single-digit shares trading at a 20 or 30% discount to our market cap. I mean, our trading price. And through the period June 23 to January 24, we lost about 320 million rand of shareholder value, and our share price dropped from 2 rand 60 to about 40 odd cents. Now, the question I've been asked many times is why? And in fact, I think the manipulators were quite clever in their strategy. Being listed on the exchange, the JSE forces you to categorize transactions. That's a fancy expression for determining what level of authority you need to approve a transaction. That's determined by ultimately comparing the purchase price, in this instance, to your market cap. And if your purchase price exceeds 30% of your market cap, you are then placed into what they call Cat 1 territory. Cat 1 territory requires the highest levels of governance, time, process. And the manipulators knew that if we were to be categorized in that level, the deal would fall away. And that was because Sibanye was running out of patience in trying to find a suitable buyer. They weren't prepared to go and do a detailed competent persons report. They wouldn't change auditors and redo their audit. So there were a whole host of fatal issues that if we went into that territory, we would be in trouble, basically.
But surely, if somebody is selling a few shares on a daily basis, it should be easy enough to pick the share price back up the next day.
Yes. So what we saw between June, 23 and January 24 was between Hoppers 4 and call it 10 to 5 before the closing auction, we literally would see sellers selling one single share at discounts. Now, why is that relevant? Because the first question is, but those are tiny amounts. Surely the volume doesn't count. Well, your market capitalization is determined by the number of shares that you have in issue times by your last traded share price. So all you need is one anomaly in a daily.
Okay, you got it. So if you can push through a very low price at the end, it's going to make your market cap for that day look very low.
Correct. So what we saw in what we've determined in our affidavit with the Hawks as phase one was this repetitive, low volume, low price sale that just repeated, you know, time over and over again through that period. For us, it made no commercial sense. You know, firstly, I'm not sure how many people trade 1 cent. Now, yes, one share. I'm aware of Easy Equities. I'm aware of their role in opening up the market to all the differing LSMs. But if you look at the sheer economics of it, you know, that really is a waste of time for almost every player. Outside of Easy Equities, we brought in our auditors to do an analysis of all the different broking fees to understand what that kind of break-even economic value was. And you at 200 or 250 Rand as a full purchase to justify making the investment. So throughout this period, we just had repetitive low-balling trades that took us from the market cap of, you know, well, let me say a share price of 2 Rand 60 down to 40-odd cents. What we then saw was the manipulation pattern change. And our view on that is that from January onwards, they knew they had us in Category 1 territory. And then we saw a whole host of blocking mechanisms. So I think the first point to make, manipulation is not just on who trades at what levels. It's also around using the market depth, the bids and the offers, in this instance, block us. And let me give you a practical example. By January 2024, the average block size of Montengu trades was 10 to 15,000 shares per trade, plus or minus. At the same time, we would see offerors putting in 70 times the multiple at the lowest offer price. which makes no sense. Firstly, commercially, as a seller in an upward moving market, you would rather spread your sales over all the different price points and enjoy the uptick in price. And the second element is that by placing ginormous offers to sell at the lowest price point, it would take the natural movement in the market inordinately longer to break through that price point. And for us, that was very clear from January onwards through to when we did our first legal action in June.
Mark, I know you are very involved in the detail of it, and it is interesting to people who've spent their lives watching the markets. But for those who are outside of all of this, they say, well, market cap, one share down, up, and et cetera. Perhaps you can just bottom line it. It appears from what you've said that there was a strategy by a group of people, call it a syndicate, to use the financial tools that they had at their command, which anybody, I guess, could do on the JSE. But there has to be somebody who's monitoring that, and that would presumably be the Johannesburg Stock Exchange itself. Was there any action from the JSE to at least identify these parties, or if not, to make it more difficult for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd make the following comments. Given the conflicting legislation, as I mentioned earlier, the challenge that a listed director has is that you're three quarters blind. So yes, I can see the very basic trade data daily, like any of us can on any of our apps. And I get to see my share register on a weekly basis, but always in arrears. So I've got very limited access and insight into what's actually happening in our trade data. And all of that data sits with the JSE. So from, when we were first made aware of this issue, we didn't have a knee-jerk reaction and run off to the JSE and, report all the relevant parties involved. We took our time. We brought in our auditors, lawyers, advisors, and they held us, our hand through the process until in January 24, when there seemed to be a peak in this manipulation. We actually shot the flare up to the JSE for the first time and said, guys, please, we need some help here. This is the process. This is what we've gone through. These are our concerns. And we want to issue a SENS announcement to warn our shareholders to trade cautiously. Unfortunately, in that session, we were hoping to get support and an ear. We got absolutely the opposite. And since then, the JSE has played no meaningful role in our investigation. They have not communicated in one session on a tangible basis. And in fact, in the background throughout this period has actually been attacking the company. So it has been a very difficult investigation that we've largely had to try and unravel ourselves, almost in the shadows with no support. So to be honest, we aren't that happy with the JSE's response, obviously. And I think through this period, knowing that we're half blind, we can only follow where the evidence takes us. And the evidence over that period of time has pointed to the parties involved. It points to a syndicate and a front involved, which we've collated all of the information. We've reported that front to the JSE. They've done absolutely nothing on that. And clearly now there's some serious players involved with this front. And our view is they're being protected. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I can't tell you, knowing that I'm half blind. But the only thing a responsible director and responsible kind of corporate SA citizen can do is to collate all of the information and hand it over to the authorities to take the investigation further. So the point I'm really trying to make is we've gone through this as carefully, as cautiously as possible. And the steps we took last week haven't been easy decisions to take. But our view in protecting our shareholders, my responsibility as the lead director is that I've got to protect the company, through both good and bad times. And this is obviously one of the very difficult times.
When an outsider has a look at your stock and sees that the share price has declined so significantly, there would be a rational conclusion that if the company's really worthwhile, somebody would have come in and snapped up the shares at the much lower price. Why do you think that hasn't happened?
So I think if you take a step back, the first point is that Montengu's really at the beginning of its journey. We're very much in the development and build phase. We acquired four new businesses last week. We're putting those into different forms of operation. And obviously, there's naturally a lag between development build and operational cash flow. So I think you're quite correct. In due course, I have no doubt that's what's going to take place. But even at these levels, you know, we released an extremely positive trading announcement last week. The board sitting next week to finalize our numbers. And as the trading statement outlined, our trading numbers will significantly exceed our market cap. So I think one needs to look at Mantengu in its journey and where it is from a growth perspective. And I think if you take that into account, you will see that the metrics are significantly skewed.
But then my point being, somebody would come and buy the shares. Are we all just
quite possibly
excited?
So I think, you know, as far as small to mid cap stocks go, I think Mantengu is actually quite liquid. So if I go back to June 23, which is really when we started trading, having sorted out all of the kind of reverse takeover and listing issues, we were trading at about 1,500 shares a day at the time. We peaked at about 1 million-odd shares about a month or so ago, and I think we're at about 650 or 700,000 shares at the moment. So I think as far as small to mid-cap stocks go, we're actually liquid. And one of the financial journalists correctly pointed out to us is that you're an absolute anomaly. And those trading patterns indicate that there could be something untoward happening. And that's really what we're saying, you know, from where we're sitting, the process we've gone through, there are just too many things that make absolutely no sense, compounded by the fact that we see the JSE as not having our back in this regard.
So Mr. Bester says you are a delusional fantasist. It sounds pretty harsh from somebody that you knew very well, but then again, you're accusing him of being a bit of a Trojan horse.
Well, to be honest, I needed to go buy a dictionary to understand what most of those wonderful adjectives actually meant. So that's my starting point. I can't really comment for that side of the transaction, other than this is not a figment of our imagination. There was a formal whistleblowing action. We've reported it. We've followed all of the evidence. We can clearly show you that SEEM is being used as a front on the JSE. We can clearly show you how there are common directors, lawyers, audit partners, audit firm, registered addresses sitting between SEEM and the Liberty Group. Well, that's not a figment of my imagination. I think, I think it's a poorly set out structure that could have been probably done a bit better than that. But Alec, you know, we just have to deal with the facts. For me, this is not a personal issue. You haven't seen us calling anybody names. And as I said to you earlier, I think he's a smart man. So we're just dealing with the facts unemotionally. For us, this is a big decision. We've already been threatened from almost every quarter of the sector, but our commitment to our shareholders is resolute, and we're going to see this thing through to its conclusion.
What then is the motive of your enemies?
So the original motive in our mind was most definitely to disrupt the acquisition of Blue Ridge and the trading patterns, both in phase one, where it was to drop our market cap, and phase two to keep us at the deflated price, supports that. But as we got deeper into the investigation, our view is, our considered view, which we hope is wrong, by the way, is that it appears this is just one syndicate of many operating on the exchange. Now, I don't say that lightly, and I hope that we're wrong. But again, being half blind, we can only hand the matter over for further investigation. But if I had to say to you, Alec, knowing what you know now about state capture, if I took you back 10 years ago and I said to you the presidency, the various ministers, some very big audit names and legal names would be involved, you would tell me, Mike, you're absolutely smoking your socks. And I know what we're saying sounds absolutely crazy, but with the evidence we've got, the only logical explanation is the one we've put in our affidavit and asked the Hawks to investigate on behalf of the company.
Okay. And that is?
And that is to understand whether or not the JSE's monitoring and surveillance team is complicit in the syndicates operating on the exchange. It's to investigate the fronting of or behind seams, sable exploration and mining, and to effectively understand whether or not the JSE has been compromised, which again, I think wearing a Mantengu and South African hope, we all sorely, you know, dearly hope that that we're wrong. But in this instance, who's there to provide oversight? We just don't believe it exists. And that's why we've shot the flare up to say, please, we do need help. And the easiest way to do that is to hand it over to the Hawks, who, you know, obviously are our crime busting division, and their rules transcend most of the other acts that we obviously get stopped by.
And what do the people at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange have to say about this? We've got Leila Faree, who is pretty highly regarded in international fora. She, as the CEO of the company, does take responsibility. What's her response been? Because those are pretty hectic allegations.
Yeah, and again, I think let me say that we understand the severity of what's happened. We haven't taken the decision lightly. The decision's been taken over basically 2 years' worth of investigation with advice from all of our experts. So I want to make the point, this is not a knee-jerk emotional response from Mantengu. It's a very considered, cautious, prudent approach. The JSE's response, in our view, has been emotional, angry, bluster, and I can understand why. But this is not a personal attack on the JSE. We've got no issue with the JSE as an institution. But our concern as directors and owners of this business is that there are anomalies that need investigation. So our view in terms of the JSE's response should be not to bully or threaten or to try and keep us away from making SENS announcements, for example. Right? It should be a case of, Mike, we flat out deny any of the allegations. We don't like the manner in which it's happened. But we understand that you're a listed company. You adhere to the highest levels of governance. And as a result, what we're prepared to do is investigate this fully. And let's all hope that you're wrong. And that would have been the response that we would have hoped for from what should be the pinnacle of good governance in the country. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the response we've got.
So they're not going to investigate. They're just pushing you to the side?
Well, I think that's what they're certainly trying to do. And unfortunately for them, I don't think they understand the heart in the small dog. So, you know, our view is, as I mentioned to you earlier, as a director, we've got to support the company through both good and bad times. This is an extremely difficult time for us. We're keeping it away from our operations. Yours truly has to take this head on. And we just want to get to the bottom of it. At the end of the day, we really want to be left alone. We want the natural market forces to drive our price up and down. But we're just not seeing that. And as a passionate South African, and going through all of my educational years, I've always looked up to the JSE. And this is, in my instance, when the JSE needs to hold our hand and say, we may not agree with you, but let's just make sure we've ticked off all the boxes, so that nothing is untoward happening.
Before we go, we have covered Ulrich Bester. What about Zunaid Motti? What is his role in all of this? He is a controversial and colorful character.
Yes, I don't know Mr. Motti at all. I've never had a business dealing with him. But what happened in June 2024 is that we issued and we obtained two urgent orders. One was an Anton Pillar and one was an interdict against Ulrich Bester. It's a very tightly controlled process where you've got independent lawyers, accountant, the sheriff, etc., executing the raid to make sure that your chain of custody is correct. And whilst the raid was happening, Mr. Motti phoned one of our executives and asked us for an urgent meeting to resolve this issue as gentlemen. So the first point I would make is, out of the blue, we get a phone call from Mr. Motti in the middle of the raid saying, please, can we resolve the issue? As a board, we made the decision to go and listen because we didn't understand to what extent, really what we were dealing with. We met up at Mr. Motti's offices on the Monday afternoon. In the meeting was Mr. McGowan, it was Mr. Bester, the tobacco attorneys, Mr. Motti, his son, and a couple of others, myself and the CFO were there. And in that meeting, it was clear that Mr. Motti knew far too much about our share price. no normal person outside of, as you said earlier, it's a complicated process with complex, it's just not something that ordinary people would understand. He made a joke in the meeting that he would short us to 10 cents. I then responded saying to him, please short us to 1 cent. And when we issue our first earnings report or dividend, the market will then outmuscle this. And that was really the end of the meeting. We could see at that point that something was really amiss. And again, that's not us, shaking the tree and wanting to take on Mr. Mott. He's a very serious business player, way above our league. But we didn't call him. He called us in the middle of a raid. And that's really what we've had to deal with. And it was since then that we've had criminal issues, obviously. As you mentioned in the beginning, we've had drones flying over our offices. We've had hits put out myself and the CFO. We had our senior engineer hijacked with a mock assassination about 6 weeks or so ago. And even today, coming into this meeting, we've got two suspicious vehicles with AK-47s near our Zerust operation. So these aren't figments of our imagination. I don't like having personal security. I've had them now for almost a year. So it's not something we take lightly. And it was also at that point when we realized, we could see, but we couldn't see. We needed to look for what we couldn't see. And it was that point that we picked up on the issues around SIEM being used as a front and the links into the JSE. So again, that's unfortunately, those are factual statements. Those are not, the statements of a delusional narcissistic something CEO.
What did Motti want in that meeting?
So on the face of it, he wanted to resolve the share manipulation issue, the fact that we had executed an Anton pillar, but clearly our agendas were all misaligned. And we realized at the end of it, there was no gentleman's agreement to be had here. And we continued to be, obviously exposed to the manipulation through that period.
But what was his agreement? What did he ask for?
There wasn't a formal ask in the meeting. I think what the intention was, or the market intention, or the agenda of the meeting was to try and find a gentleman's mechanism of kind of smoothing this over and not taking the investigation further. Now, obviously, that's not something we can do. Once you start an investigation like this, as I said earlier, you got to follow the evidence unemotionally, get to a considered view, and then look at all your legal options. And again, that ended for us when we knew we couldn't do any more, and that's why we handed the matter over to the Hawks.
For those who don't know, an Anton pillar is one of the most hectic legal countenances that one can get against a offending party. So it isn't issued lightly. And it certainly is something pretty scary if you're on the other end of it, as Mintangu's opponents were in that instance. Mike Miller is the CEO of Mintangu. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.